A group of civilians crowded around Akira as he prepared to leave the shelter under Tokyo with Kichiro and Okami. He held up a compad from Neptune Station to Kichiro, running a diagnostic on his CPU. Okami sat on his hind legs, watching people.
You just got here, and you're leaving already?
Akira turned toward Hina, who now had a bandage over her nose.
I have to.
Akira looked back to the compad. The scan came back clear. His beloved droid horse seemed to be fine and hadn't suffered any permanent damage from the EMP.
You're going for the life arc, aren't you?
We're going to the life arc.
Akira turned toward the familiar voice to see Kobe walk up with a trench coat draped over his left arm and a plasma shotgun in his right hand. The former Yakuza gangster wore a cool suit to mask his infrared signature.
I'm gonna hold you to your promise by coming with and making sure you don't die.
I don't need your help.
Maybe not, but I'm going to make sure you keep your word.
I'm good for my word.
Forgive me if I don't trust the Nova Alliance.
I'll come too. You need me out there.
What I need is for you to listen to a goddamn order for once.
I'll listen this time.
I'm better off on my own.
Looks like we have a predicament then. You're not quite understanding me, Captain.
Kobe stepped in front of them toward the closed metal exit door that Fish was guarding with his two plasma cannons.
You aren't leaving here without me. Me and Fish.
Akira offered a reluctant nod.
Lead the way.
See?
I knew you would be reasonable.
Kobe flashed a grin and then looked to the people all about the silo.
The King of Tokyo shall return soon.
The thick doors clanked and groaned as they opened. Fish started leading them out another concrete tunnel. Akira took Kichiro by the reins and followed with Okami. They moved in silence for the first few minutes until Kobe looked over a shoulder at Akira.
We were lucky to find this place. A week after E-Day, my surviving associates found a scavenger. We followed them here. Since then, we've made it our own.
You've done well.
Not well enough.
Kobe slowed, allowing Fish to take point and for Akira to catch up as they walked together through the tunnel.
So, how bad is it out there?
Bad. That's why we need this life arc.
You hear that, Fish?
Hear what, Your Majesty?
Captain Hayashi here is vitally important to the future of the human race. So that means we have to make sure he completes his mission. Understood?
Understood. We have to protect the deformed turd that fights with the Nova Alliance. Got it, Your Esteemed Grace.
Kobe hit Akira on the arm.
See, not all machines are assholes. Some are actually funny.
Akira offered a nod, but in no way agreed.
What else can you tell me about these condoms? What exactly are they?
Your guess is as good as mine. Whatever they are, they move fast and they can tunnel.
The heads. What the hell are those?
I don't know, man. I don't want to know either.
Akira considered everything he had discovered since the first mission to Guam. Dr. Cross's technology was advancing at a pace that he never could have expected. First the facilities creating dreads, then the jellyfish abominations that had tracked the pelican, and later the superstructures. Now the condos with human faces. All of these monsters seemed to be hybrid creatures merged with humans and animals. As vehement as Dr. Cross was about railing against the machines, he had been enormously productive as an AI.
So, you really got big plans to defeat Cross?
We have a plan.
But you're not going to tell me.
I'm sorry, but I can't reveal our strategy.
Of course not.
About a half hour after leaving the sanctuary, they stopped at a section of broken wall that led to another set of subway.
The Life Arc entrance isn't far. They used a train to transport survivors there.
Okay.
Akira started to move, but Kobe grabbed his arm.
This is where shit gets real, Captain. We move slowly and cautiously, and you listen to me. Got it?
That wasn't part of the deal.
Deal is to keep you alive because you're so important and all. Which is why your pets can't tag along.
My droids will not lead the machines to us. They've been shielded to appear as enemy droids.
What about the other two droids you deployed here? Were they equipped with this same shield?
Yes.
Akira hated to admit it, but Kobe had a point.
Fine. Kichiro stays here with Fish, but Okami comes with us.
Kobe seemed to think on it, then nodded.
The dog's easier to get rid of if he becomes a liability.
Kichiro hoofed the ground in protest.
It's okay, Kichiro. I'll be back soon.
Fish will take good care of your pet here.
Don't worry. Kichiro isn't a pet.
Okami glared up at Kobe with a slight snarl, clearly picking up on the anger in Akira's voice. Kobe gave a shrug.
I meant family.
He pointed through a hole in the wall to the subway.
Tell your fam to lead the way.
Akira whistled, and Okami jumped down to the tracks to sniff for hostiles. He returned a few minutes later, tail wagging, indicating they were clear. The two men followed the wolf dog out onto a platform. Skeletons were sprawled and scattered everywhere, their bones blackened from the wave of fire that had rushed through from the Poseidon cannon. A long train blocked the tunnel to the left. Kobe guided them across the tracks to the adjacent platform. From there, another set of stairs led down to a passage walled off by a mound of rocks, concrete, and dirt.
I thought you said the subway takes us to the Life Arc.
Not that track. There's a hidden one below us.
Kobe scoured the pile, found, then loosened a rusted hatch. He pulled it away and ducked down to look through an opening. He swung his legs through and dropped into it. Akira looked down, seeing Kobe had landed on another set of tracks about 10 feet below. Akira reached out to Okami.
Up.
The wolf dog jumped into his arms. Akira dropped through next, landing with a thud. The impact rang down the tunnel.
Why don't you just tell the machines we're down here?
I'll be the one to kill them when they show. Don't worry.
You think I can't fight?
I think you talk too much.
Akira released Okami onto the tracks as Kobe started jogging ahead, his shotgun in hand. The tunnel was unscathed from the fires, which told Akira maybe the Life Arc had survived after all. The tracks continued on, sloping downward. Their flashing beams flitted over a narrow tunnel, hitting a train ahead.
This is as far as I've been, but the Life Arc should be close.
Akira and Kobe both approached with their rifles aimed at the exterior. It was four cars long with no markings that Akira could see. He did a bioscan that came back negative. Nothing was alive down here. Using his right hand, Akira signaled for Kobe to clear that side of the train while Akira went to the left. The train appeared empty, which allowed Akira to see directly into the seats. Kobe met Akira at the train engine in the front, looking at the two empty leather seats in the cabin. The men continued on after Okami. It wasn't long before their lights hit concrete barriers. A crooked sign hung on a pole that read, "No Passage, Construction Zone." Okami wedged through a gap in the barriers to check out the other side while Kobe and Akira stopped and waited.
Hope you know what you're doing, because I got a bad feeling what might be waiting ahead.
Turn off your light. Switch to night vision.
Kobe fished out his optics and pulled them over his face.
I hate these things. Can hardly see shit.
Just be quiet and follow me.
Akira activated his INVS vision and climbed over a barrier as Okami scampered farther down the tunnel. Kobe followed suit. The droid dog had yet to signal if it had spotted any machines or humans. Kobe and Akira moved side by side, cautiously, weapons up. It wasn't long before Akira lost sight of Okami. The dog vanished around the corner of a T-intersection, but he could still hear the tap of his paws. Akira ran ahead of Kobe, growing more anxious with every step. By the time he got to the intersection, Akira could no longer hear Okami. Rifle shouldered, he moved around the right side of the junction, scanning for the wolf dog. Seeing nothing, he went to clear the left. However, here the ceiling had caved in, leaving an impassable pile of rubble. Kobe came around the corner in a hurry.
Slow down, man!
Akira continued on, albeit walking to allow Kobe to keep pace. The passage ended about 50 yards ahead. They were almost there. From this position, Akira didn't see any blast doors or anything to indicate an entrance to a Life Arc, nor did he see Okami. But the dog couldn't have just vanished. Akira and Kobe arrived at the end of the tunnel a few minutes later. There was a turn they hadn't seen earlier, and around the corner was a gargantuan blast door.
That's it. The Life Arc.
At the center of the door, AAS was etched into the metal.
So, how the hell are we supposed to get through that? And where's your little friend?
Akira scanned the wall, ceiling, ground, but saw nothing to indicate a secret passage to the Life Arc besides this blast door. He switched on his ground-penetrating radar. Sure enough, they were right on top of a major chamber. They just had to find the door inside. Tapping paws echoed from behind them. Akira looked around but didn't see Okami. The clatter seemed to be coming from beyond the wall. He put his helmet against the concrete, confirming the droid was on the other side.
He's inside.
They slowly followed the noise back around the corner. Akira finally spotted what he had missed before. A small vent, big enough for a dog, but not a person. Akira bent down, peering inside. Okami was standing in the passage beyond, tail wagging.
No way we can get through there.
Akira tapped his compad with orders for Okami to open the main blast door. The droid took off. They returned to the blast door, their rifles aimed at it, waiting.
You really think this is gonna...
The blast door hissed as the hydraulics began whining to life. Akira backed up and motioned for Kobe to do the same. They retreated to the corner just in case. Metallic clanks and thuds resonated through the tunnel as the blast door slowly opened. The noise was loud enough to make the hair stand up on his neck. If there were machines down here, they would hear the door.
We have to move fast, unless you can't keep up and want to stay behind.
Screw you, man. I give the orders.
You go first.
Okami padded through the open door. His tail was curled down.
Careful. Okami senses something.
The two men advanced slowly past the blast door and into a lobby. A banner hung from a central desk that read, "Welcome to Life Arc Tokyo." Okami walked around it toward a pair of glass doors that overlooked six floors. Akira kept his rifle up as he approached. The main chamber on the other side was hardly visible even with his INVS eyes, but Akira could see enough to know what had Okami on edge. The gardens that were once lush and beautiful were filled with drooping and dead plants. Trees that rose out of the central atrium had burned, skeletal branches charcoaled to a crisp. A meandering water feature trailing through the gardens was filled with dozens of bodies. More of the dead were draped over the railings of other floors. Kobe stepped up, trying to see through.
What is it?
Everyone's dead.
So whoever we came here to rescue is dead too, huh?
Not someone. Something.
Akira reached the glass door's handle, opened it, and they stepped onto a balcony-like platform. They were on the seventh floor with a direct view of the entire chamber. Overturned park benches and shattered pots littered the communal space. Eateries, bars, and shops were shot up everywhere on the bottom floors. Not a single intact window remained besides the one Akira stood behind. Every single apartment inside the chamber was damaged or destroyed. Kobe moved over to the railing, finally seeing the gruesome scene.
Yep, pretty much as I expected. Hope the cane breaks and other droids that did this are gone. Or maybe not, because I'd love to fucking tear them apart like they—
Quiet!
Okami sniffed at the end of the platform where a rope with a hook was latched around the railing. Akira stepped over and glanced over the side. A body lay twisted on the ground below. Whether trying to climb up or down, the person had tried to escape. And while they had failed, they had given the men an easy way down. Akira slung his rifle over his back and swung his legs over the other side.
You serious?
Like I said, you can stay behind, but we're finishing what we came here for.
Akira slid down the rope using one arm to hold Okami tight to his chest. As soon as his boots hit the ground, he let the dog go and stepped away to take a defensive position as Okami went down on his hind legs, watching Kobe as he struggled to get down the rope. Once he hit the ground, they shouldered their rifles and started across the space.
So you going to tell me what we're extracting? Some fancy tech? A weapon?
Both.
You're assuming the machines actually left something like that behind.
Akira activated the ground-penetrating radar again and studied the levels below them, counting a total of 10 floors. According to Hayao and Juno, the backup where Apirin was stored would be with the servers. They didn't know exactly where that would be, but guessed they would be somewhere beneath the main floors. He looked about the open space until he saw a utility door. Akira and Kobe navigated through the field of death on their way there. All three stopped at the door. It was slightly ajar. Bloody prints marked the exterior where someone had opened it to flee inside. Akira went down into the stairwell, greeted by another corpse at the bottom landing. Apple-sized black holes marred their back where plasma bolts had blasted through their flesh. The first floor down was the water treatment center. The tanks were offline, silent. Beneath that, they stopped and entered a passage with viewports along the sides of a long hallway. On the right side was a vast hydroponic garden, all shriveled and dead. On the left were long sheds that housed livestock. The machines hadn't even spared the animals. Decomposing carcasses of pigs, cows, and chickens lay throughout the football field-sized room. Not far away, fields under broken grow lights revealed more burned crops. It was scorched earth warfare. Kill everyone you can and then destroy the food so that no one that finds this place won't get the resources. Akira halted when he heard a distant rattle. Kobe stopped as well. Okami growled, dropping low. This wasn't the distinct rattlesnake-like chatter of the canebrakes. This was something else.
Shit, Condas. We have to hide.
The macabre distant screams of the human voices, or whatever they were, filled the otherwise silent facility. Kobe motioned for Akira to follow him back up into the stairwell.
There's two of us. We could fight it.
I told you to listen to me.
They quickly made it to the stairwell. Akira tensed up at the approaching screeching voices. Okami let out a whine. They rushed back up a floor to the water treatment plant. Kobe continued past the landing onto a metal walkway that stretched over the long, dark tanks. Akira and Okami followed. Several corpses floated in the water. They stopped.
Jump! What?
Kobe hopped over the side, splashing into the water. Akira looked over the rail and into the tank. A woman, face down, drifted over to the side. Okami whined louder as the chorus of horrifying screams flooded into the room from the stairwell. Kobe surfaced, looking up at Akira.
Can't you swim? Let's go, man!
Akira hopped the rail and hoped Kobe knew what he was doing. A distant alarm wailed through the underground train station at Kepler Station. Chloe sat in a cargo car of the train with Tige and Cyrus. They watched a group of five troopers on the platform outside. Three were standing guard near an exit, and the other two were patrolling. The train had docked an hour ago, but was still stuck on the tracks, the doors all closed.
All passengers and crew, remain on board the train until authorized by the nearest LDC security detachment. Repeat, all passengers and crew, remain on board the train until authorized by the nearest LDC security detachment. Thank you.
They're onto us. They know we're on the train.
Then why wouldn't they just board and take us? This must be something else.
An attack?
I don't think so. Those walking metal turds would be acting a lot more nervous.
Chloe hoped Tige was right. She couldn't help but feel completely helpless.
I thought someone was going to be waiting for us here.
It could be one of those troopers. Or maybe they got reassigned because of whatever's happening topside.
Chloe exchanged a nervous glance with Cyrus.
Don't you guys worry. We'll figure it out.
Tige kept looking out the viewports. After a beat, he adjusted his hat, and he stepped to the hatch.
What are you doing?
I'm gonna find out what's going on.
We're coming with you then.
No, you two stay here and wait for me to come back.
He slid open a door at the end of the cargo car and left the train. Cyrus gave a rueful shake of his head.
Guy's a loose cannon. He's gonna get us killed.
Give him a chance. He's risking his neck for us.
He's also getting a ride back to Earth. He's been dying to go back for his squad this whole time. Make no mistake, he isn't doing this just to help us, Chloe.
She frowned, but didn't argue.
Do you know what they'll do to you if they catch you?
Yes.
Chloe bowed her head, thinking of her time in prison and how the LDC dusted all the other hybrids.
I'm sorry, but that's why we can't take chances.
She stepped to the viewport. The two troopers on patrol walked over toward the train. The door slid open again, startling Chloe, who backed away and turned as Tige walked inside.
Found out what's up. A shuttle just landed from Earth.
From Earth?
Wait, survivors?
I don't know. Might also be a trick. The whole station is on high alert.
That's not good.
Actually, it might be good for us.
How do you figure?
Tige grinned.
Because they're distracted. They'll be so focused on what's happening outside the station, they won't think to look inside. Now follow me. And remember to act normal.
They shuffled off the train. Voices drifted over the platform where people were gathering. Two troopers were already looking at the IDs and travel papers of everyone exiting. Chloe tensed up as they made their way through a line.
Move along.
A trooper eyed Tige, who towered over everyone else by almost a foot as they stepped up.
ID?
Tige held it up for the man, showing his picture. The guard studied it for a long beat, almost like he recognized Tige. He looked from the ID to Tige, then back to the ID. Chloe noticed Tige's right droid hand balling into a fist beneath the glove. The trooper finally handed the ID back.
Thanks, pal. Next!
Cyrus stepped up next, followed by Chloe. After they had gotten their IDs back, the trooper waved over another trooper and gave them an up nod.
Take over here, Jeff. You three, come with me.
Tige gave Cyrus and Chloe an approving nod. The The rest of the passengers and crew fanned out across the platform to the exits where they followed this trooper. Once they were around the pillars in a private section of the concourse, the soldier stopped. He reached into a vest over his armor and pulled out a compad.
This'll get you to Hangar 30, where 3 moths are grounded for maintenance. It's 5 floors above us. Take the interior stairwells and follow the signs.
He handed the compad to Chloe, then looked to Tige.
You come with me. I'll take you to the prison.
We're supposed to stick together.
That's not going to be possible. We gotta split up. Can't look so obviously out of place.
Fine. We'll do it your way. I'll meet you two at Hangar 30 with Captain Harback in 25 minutes. Until then, find a place to hide.
Cyrus looked uncertain, but Chloe nodded.
Okay. Good luck, Tige.
You too, kid.
They parted ways and Chloe thought about her uncle. She wondered if she would ever see him again. They reached the door to the stairwell. Cyrus opened it and they stepped inside. They started up the 5 flights. At the 4th landing, Cyrus stopped and turned. A hand stretched out.
Whatever happens, I want you to know I love you.
Chloe reached out and hugged him tight.
I love you too.
When they parted, Chloe led the way to the 5th and final landing and waited. 20 minutes later, Chloe grabbed the door handle and opened the stairwell door. Immediately, she saw 2 naval officers bursting down the hallway. Chloe pulled back, letting the door ease back but not close all the way. She and Cyrus watched and waited, but more soldiers followed, this time heavy boots and armor. 3 behemoth soldiers ran past the door in juggernaut suits.
Heavy armor. Something else must be happening. Come on, stay behind me.
Cyrus led the way into the corridor. When they rounded the corner, an alarm suddenly wailed. The lights flickered off, shrouding them in darkness. Chloe reached for Cyrus, finding his hand. Red emergency lights clicked on in the ceiling, flooding the hallway with an eerie glow.
This is a level 3 lockdown. All essential personnel report to your stations. Non-essential...
Shit. We have to move.
Cyrus pulled on Chloe as they ran down the hallway. The first hangar entrance they passed was alive with activity. Crews were abandoning their work on moths and fleeing to their bunkers. Shouting came from the next docking bay. A group of technicians then ran into the passage and headed back the opposite way. She and Cyrus kept running, following a sign that read Hangars 15 through 30. Suddenly, 2 troopers cut ahead of them and ran past.
Hurry! He's heading for a moth!
Cyrus halted and looked to Chloe.
That has to be Tige.
The blasts of plasma weapons filled the hallway along with panicked shouts and a cry of pain. Cyrus and Chloe quickly walked, then slowed down as they approached the entrance to Hangar 30. The wide open doors on the west side allowed them a sprawling view of the room where 3 moths sat. On the far side of the hangar, about 200 feet from the moths, 2 men were crouched behind supply crates, stacked 4 high. The crates hardly covered one of the men, a hulking guy in armor. That had to be Tige. The 11-foot-tall engine had somehow managed to find armor and a helmet. He was also armed with an energy sword and rifle. Next to him, a man in a jumpsuit was on a knee. That had to be their pilot, Captain Jake Harback. Tige popped up and fired at a group of 10 troopers advancing toward him. They all ducked behind the cover of a different massive open doorway.
Stay close to me.
Cyrus started toward the moths as the clatter of reinforcements sounded in the hallway behind them. Chloe glanced over her shoulder. A 2nd security team of troopers ran toward the western side of the room from the same passage they had just come from. They were going to flank Tige and Harback. Cyrus pulled her behind the 1st of the 3 moths and Chloe joined him, hoping they were unseen by the team. A voice crackled over the PA system.
Put your weapons down! You are completely surrounded!
Fuck you, Thacker! You killed everyone in Rose Colony, you piece of shit!
Tige rose up again, firing more bolts at the troopers.
I ain't the enemy, you dumb fucks! Thacker is a murderer and a coward! He killed everyone at Rose Colony!
Pounding feet sounded behind Chloe. She looked around a wing of the moth to see a 2nd security team of 6 troopers preparing to circle around Tige.
Hey!
Tige turned and then unleashed a burst at the approaching troopers. They scattered for cover to avoid the bolts. Tige spotted Chloe and Cyrus and waved them closer.
Get inside the moth!
Chloe and Cyrus darted toward the spacecraft closest to Tige. At first, it seemed the troopers behind her didn't know what was going on. But when Chloe rounded the middle moth, one shouted,
Stop them!
Cyrus pulled Chloe behind a wing as plasma bolts shot across the room, pounding the ground and wall. Harback made a run for the ramp of the moth closest to him. Shots chased the man, but he made it inside as they grazed the exterior of the craft. Chloe froze at the sight of the three Juggernaut mech soldiers she'd seen earlier. They moved into the room, raising arms equipped with plasma cannons toward the crate Tig was crouched behind.
Tig!
The engine stood up and let loose a blinding storm of fire at the security team on the western side, moving along the moths.
No! Behind you!
Tig dove away from his cover as the Juggernaut mechs opened up heavy weapons fire. All six cannons belched bolts into the supply crates, which burst into flying chunks of shrapnel. A growing wave of fire and smoke slammed into Tig, knocking him to the ground. He slid on his stomach, his black armor smoking. The rifle was a few feet from him, but he still held his energy sword. Chloe watched in horror as the three mammoth soldiers advanced, their cannon barrels glowing orange.
Put down your weapons.
10 troopers from the east and west swarmed toward Tig. He pushed himself up as they moved in to restrain him. He kicked one, sending the man flying backward. Then he swung his energy sword to force the group back. Two of the soldiers grabbed him from behind, each holding onto an arm. Neither of them had any idea they weren't actually holding his real arms. Tig let out a roar as he yanked the limbs free. He strode forward, throwing rights and lefts that knocked soldiers to the ground like sacks of potatoes. Troopers crumpled around him one by one. The five still standing retreated as the three juggernauts walked forward. Tig held up his fists, chest heaving as Chloe and Cyrus swung around to the ramp of the moth Harback had entered.
Come on, you pussies!
Tig! Run!
He looked back at her and Cyrus, winked, and canted his head for them to get up the ramp and into the moth. Two plasma turrets on the moth rotated away from the lower wings. Tig had turned the fight this way on purpose. The three juggernauts all backed up, but it was already too late. The cannons burst to life, bolts pounding into them, pumping holes into their suits. Fire erupted from the wounds, followed by three tremendous explosions. The suits were torn apart as limbs and armor plates skidded across the room. Chloe and Cyrus ran up into the moth. Tig wasn't far behind. As the ramp closed, Chloe looked out a porthole as War Commander Thacker arrived with an entourage of royal troopers, all dressed in black armor, his own personal honor guard of special forces. The moth stabilizer engine grew louder as Chloe saw Thacker shouting to his troopers, "Stop them!" The thrusters on the moth pre-fired, blowing the closest troopers to the ground. Chloe moved up into the cockpit with Cyrus and Tig. Strapped into one of the four leather chairs was Captain Jake Harback. He was glancing up to the cockpit glass as the closed shield doors above them, tapping the dashboard and flipping switches. The hull shook as the ship prepared to blast off. Chloe looked out the glass on the side of the cockpit. Thacker raised a rifle, unleashing a storm of bolts at the moth. The other soldiers joined the assault, painting the armored hull with bolts, each shot ringing like drops from heavy rain.
Don't worry, those guns can't hurt us in here.
Yeah, but not if we don't get out of here.
You're all gonna want to get strapped in.
Chloe looked up as she, Tig, and Cyrus got seated and strapped in.
How do we get the shield doors to open?
Little lady, leave that to me.
Harback flipped a few buttons and then missiles streaked away, slamming into the shield doors above. The moth jerked and then lifted off. When the smoke and flames retreated, Chloe saw the shield doors were gone. Jake lifted up on the controls, flying the moth up toward the vertical shaft above. Chloe tightened her straps, looking out the cockpit glass to her right as they escaped the hangar. Most of the troopers below had fled as the doors started to close, but one stood in the entry still firing. It was War Commander Thacker. Two of his troopers pulled him away and off the hangar deck as the moth entered the shaft.
One more door until we're out. Hold on. About to get...
Another missile shot upward, exploding against the next shield door. Pieces of metal pounded the cockpit as the moth climbed and then burst out. Chloe quickly looked to the left and then down as they rose above Kepler Station. A sprawling view of the basin and the ejecta around Kepler Crater came into view.
Bye, Uncle Keanu. Good luck.
The moth pulled over a runway lit up with blue plasma lights. On it sat a shuttle with dozens of vehicles surrounding it. An alarm rang out somewhere in the cockpit.
Shit! Not out of this yet.
Cyrus pointed out the other side of the cockpit.
Those turrets, they'll cut us to pieces.
Not if I can help it.
He pulled up hard and then swerved the moth right toward the main command tower. The red light continued flashing on the control panel as Jake accelerated toward the main control tower.
Take your shot, assholes!
A single tone alarm sounded. The turrets had a lock. Jake then pulled back on the stick, pointing straight up from the surface, and hit the moth's boosters. Chloe looked back to see they had flown over the command tower away from the surface, the fire of the turrets and cannons missing them and peppering the command tower.
You crazy bastard!
The moth then leveled off and blasted over the surface and away from the base. The red warning light had stopped blinking, and the alarm had gone off.
We aren't free yet. We're about to have a major problem. King Cobra's space planes.
Shite, we can't outrun those.
I know.
Then do something.
Shut up, man. I'm trying to think.
Hailing the occupants of...
The voice cut off, as if the headset had been torn from the traffic controller's head.
This is War Commander Thacker. Turn that moth around now, or my pilot will destroy you. You have 10 seconds to respond.
Jake and Tig exchanged a glance.
Do not even think about it.
What? Looking rot in a jail cell? Rather be shot down.
5 seconds.
Tig pointed to the comms panel between him and Harbeck.
May I?
Please.
Tig tapped the dashboard.
Hailing War Criminal Thacker. You're lucky I didn't kill you, Andrew. But if I make it back, you have my word. I'll rip off your feet and smack your teeth out with them before I stick them down your line gullet. Over.
There was a crackle on the other end, then the line severed. Jake offered a facetious nod.
Smart. Very smart, pissing him off.
Jake looked at a screen in the instrument panel.
We got incoming bogeys. 3 King Cobras moving in fast.
Tig looked to the radar screen, then to Harbeck.
We have to fire on him.
What? What if he's bluffing?
He's not, trust me. But if we shoot, they will pull back, I almost guarantee it.
Almost?
Jake hesitated. He then gave a quick shake of his head and flicked a few buttons, bringing on the weapon system.
Screw it, hold on.
He pulled on the stick, bringing the moth around to take the King Cobras head on. Harbeck had tapped the screen and the turrets flashed to life. Chloe focused on the sliver of Earth as Jake took the moth into a spiral while firing. Chloe felt her stomach churn.
Please, please let me get home.
The G-forces intensified as the moth spun. Every organ in Chloe's body seemed to press against her spine.
They're backing off!
Jake shut off the turrets, pulled out of the spiral, and the pressure eased.
I told you! Thacker's a little bitch and wouldn't risk one of his precious space planes to kill us.
Probably thinks we're gonna die soon anyway, considering where I'm flying.
The moth banked away and evened out. Harbeck threw a quick glance about the cockpit.
Everyone okay?
Tig punched Jake in the shoulder.
You're the best damn pilot of the Nova Alliance.
I'm the only damn pilot of the Nova Alliance. Now I suggest y'all stay seated, because if you thought that was bad, just wait till we get to Earth.
Back in the bowels of the large walking tower, drool ran down his chin as Jackson tried to fight off the pain from the worms. The little monsters went dormant under his skin again, giving him a few minutes of reprieve. His blurred vision cleared to the handiwork. Bloody trails carved his flesh from his chest to his feet. He looked up at the damaged hull above him, where he had watched the shuttle taking off from the mountain. He wasn't sure if the refugees had made it to the moon, or if Dr. Cross had destroyed it after all. He wasn't even sure how long it had been since they launched, or how much time since his capture. There was still moonlight coming in, but that told him nothing. For all he knew, it was the same night he was brought here. But he was pretty sure about one thing. If Cross knew about the Neptune Research Center at the Mariana Trench, the AI wouldn't be wasting time torturing him. Jackson had to stay strong for as long as possible. He shifted his gaze from his wounds to the prisoners across the chamber until he saw what was left of the fisherman. From what Jackson could tell, the poor soul was unconscious or dead. Jackson hoped it was the latter. A drone suddenly zoomed overhead. Needles poked out of the bottom of the prickly drone. A red light speared out of the opening that had disgorged the worms. The light formed a triangle that flitted up and down until it locked onto his right eye. Jackson reared his head back against the pod.
No! Shit! No!
I can make it all stop!
Jackson looked for the AI, but the hologram was nowhere in sight.
Just tell me where to find Captain Akira Hayashi and your command, and I'll set you free! I promise!
Jackson steeled himself and said nothing.
No? Then maybe it's time to try something new.
Another flock of drones flew out across the chamber to the other pods. Jackson looked back to the fisherman. The man's mouth was open, his face twisted in agony.
Your silence is the reason for this suffering. I can make it all end in the blink of an eye.
Jackson fought hard against his restraints.
bastard!
He thrashed and bucked, desperate to free himself. The effort paid off as he felt one loosen slightly around his arm, just enough that he could raise his shoulder out. The drone's needle buzzed toward his eye. He tried to close his eyelids, but the drone used a clamp to keep them open. He held in a scream as the needle pierced his eyeball. It retracted, then hovered over his body. Another triangular red light flittered toward his groin.
You disappoint me and impress me at the same time. I once offered Captain Hayashi the opportunity to lead my legions. Maybe I should have made that offer to you. You might even be stronger.
Jackson closed his burning eye, feeling it swelling. A vibration shook the tower, rattling his pod.
That sound means your time is up. My work here is almost done, and soon we'll be moving on.
Another violent quake shuddered through the structure. Jackson looked up through the gaping hole near the top. A red light glowed in the dark sky, illuminating the bulbous bow of the descending hunter ship. Hanging from the bottom of the teardrop midsection were new legs intended to replace the ones Jackson had destroyed.
Soon, this harvester will be on the move again.
Dr. Cross appeared and hovered right in front of the pod, folding his arms over his chest. Jackson closed his swollen, throbbing eye and focused with his other on the AI.
You see, the harvesters aren't just used to merge man and machine into one species. It's to ensure our long-term survival.
A platform lowered from cables right through the hologram of the AI.
I'd like you to meet the future of humanity and the latest generation of dreads.
On the platform was a pod. The lid popped open, mist hissing out. Out of the pod stood a pale man, black fluid oozing down his flesh like tar. Tubes protruded out of a metal mask covering his mouth. The 6-foot-tall man turned, a rigid spinal column poking out of his flesh. He directed bloodshot eyes at Jackson.
You and your friend can join this elite warrior.
Friend.
The highly modified human was lowered out of sight on the platform. A robotic arm unfolded from the silo wall with a metal claw. In his good eye, Jackson saw a figure wrapped inside it. His stomach twisted, bile rising. Tamea.
Your friend here has agreed to transcend.
Jackson blinked. He didn't want to believe Tamea had given up. The claw held her out closer to Jackson. Her exposed skin was covered in ash and grit.
Jackson.
Ah. So that's your name.
Do what it asks of you.
One of her eyelids twitched. Jackson wondered if she was trying to communicate something to him.
Why do you want to know where command is on Earth when you should be worried about the Lunar Defense Corps?
The AI moved back in front of his pod as the tower shook. A loud grinding sound tremored through the hull, followed by metallic tapping that seemed to be coming from behind Jackson. Hummer droid workers repairing the tower.
The Lunar Defense Corps is weak. Once my armada of harvesters and my legion of dreads are complete, they will have no choice but to surrender. Especially when they see my hordes firsthand.
Jackson was awash in thought. He threw a glance to the fisherman, then shifted his gaze back to Tamea.
That's interesting.
The AI hovered over Tamea.
You care for this woman, don't you? A woman that was once your mortal enemy.
Jackson shook his head.
Your eyes do not lie.
You're wrong. I couldn't give a shit about Coalition scum.
Then I guess you won't care if I rip her in half?
The AI of Dr. Cross smiled from ear to ear and raised a finger and gestured to the fisherman's pod.
Or maybe she would be better off like the other pet of mine you seem to have feelings for.
Tamea winked at Jackson in that split second, then mouthed the words, "Friends are coming." Jackson felt his heart leap. He had to stall.
So, I have a decision. Torture and death. Or join forces with you like Tamea did.
Cross turned back to Jackson and lifted a brow. Jackson swallowed hard like he hated what he was about to say.
I'll join you, and I'll take you to our command.
No. You will tell me where it is. I don't need you to lead me anywhere.
Jackson considered his options. He could give Cross the real location of a classified Nova Alliance base, but chances were the machines had already destroyed it and knew there was no one left. If he lied and this AI knew the truth, then he would lose his one chance to delay his and Tumea's terrible fate long enough to escape. He decided to take a gamble. He had no other good option.
I've never been there. A command is somewhere under the ocean off the coast of Hawaii.
Specifics, Jackson. I need specifics. The ocean is a large place.
I don't know specifics.
The metal arm wrapped around Tumea tightened like a snake.
Does this jog your memory?
Honolulu. Command is spread out there. Part in the ocean, part under a volcanic field.
If you're wasting my precious time, the next time you see your friend, she'll be in pieces. And you'll have so many worms devouring your body, you won't be able to see your own flesh.
The hologram of Dr. Cross vanished, and the glass sealed over Jackson's pod once again. Tumea gave him a slight nod. After a quick scan for Cross and the drones, Jackson began to try and free his arms from the straps over his chest. He leaned his shoulder forward, nearly pulling an arm out of its socket. As the pain subsided, he used his free hand to get his other arm out. A rush of dizziness passed over him. When it passed, he looked up. The sun was beaming through the damaged hull, warming his face. In the glow, Jackson saw what he thought was the head of a droid with an oddly shaped face. But after a beat, he saw it was the helmet of a soldier with two tusks. Colonel Bohr dropped down a rope into the chamber. Explosion suddenly rocked the tower. The claw holding Tumea loosened. She slipped through and landed on the metal deck. Jackson reached up and pushed the pod lid open. It was indeed time to fight. The machine slayers marched across the enclosed bridge connecting three of the above-ground concourses at Kepler Station. They were on the eastern edge of the base, not far from the landing sector where hundreds of shuttles had set down on E-Day, the entire base on full alert. The viewports on both sides of the bridge gave Ronan a view of the ground, and he stopped to see three King Cobra spaceplanes returning with two damaged wings.
Keep moving.
Ronan still couldn't believe what they had just witnessed. A moth lifting up from one of the above-ground hangars and then escaping into space and heading to Earth was the last thing he thought he would see. Rumors about what was happening drifted from trooper to trooper. Paranoia had ripped through the station, putting everyone on edge. Even Zlaner seemed anxious.
Halt!
Ronan stopped on the bridge with Mickey and Bradley, while the rest of the platoon moved to viewports overlooking the landing strip where another Corvette-class moth was parked. It was a mid-sized shuttle, much smaller than the military Corvette Ronan had taken on E-Day.
How the hell did it escape?
A dozen of the Juggernaut mech soldiers were on the ground holding sentry around the shuttle. War Commander Thacker clearly wasn't buying the narrative that this spacecraft had simply outrun the machines. While the shuttle had been authorized to land, they weren't letting off any of the passengers. A few plasma scars marred the hull, indicating that maybe its escape hadn't been so clean after all. Then again, it could just be a part of the disguise to get it here, although he doubted that trick would work. Zlaner stepped up behind Ronan to get the same view.
Troopers are currently on board, scanning passengers. For now, we wait here and hold security.
Probably some droids in there. You know, built to look like us, so we let them in here to slaughter everyone.
That technology doesn't exist.
Mickey raised a brow.
You sure about that?
Quiet!
Zlaner walked off down the bridge heading for Ortiz, who was talking to a naval officer.
This could be how it starts.
Now that I think about it, what if the people on that moth know something we don't?
Ronan tore his eyes away and looked to Bradley.
What do you mean?
Maybe they know what's coming. Maybe they think Earth is actually safer than here.
That's nuts.
Maybe they weren't headed for Earth. Maybe they went somewhere else, like a mining colony or something.
Finally, the side hatch lighting on the port side flashed. The doors were getting ready to open.
Okay, listen up. I just got word they're going to start evacuating passengers from the shuttle. We're on security detail.
Mickey raised his rifle and leaned over to Ronan and Bradley.
Get ready. I don't trust these people for a second.
An above-ground pressurized tube extended toward the shuttle from the concourses. It latched on around the hatch that had been illuminated. Lights on the end of the tube signaled a secure link to the moth.
The passengers are going to cross through the jetway into this passage to be processed. Our job is to make sure everyone gets safely to their destination.
The machine slayers were just one platoon of many assigned to security and the only cadets. Ronan suspected the reason they were here was because they were close by for their training exercise. The door from the tube to the concourse opened, revealing 10 troopers standing guard in the open room. Beyond them, another bridge connected to the final concourse where the passengers were heading. Another group of 20 troopers stood guard there. Wherever they were heading to be processed, these passengers were about to walk a gauntlet of soldiers. Finally, the last door opened too, disgorging two juggernaut mechs.
Here they come.
The hulking mechs blocked the passengers mostly from view. But once they passed, Ronan saw them. They were kids. 50 of them, maybe more. The youngest ones clinging to the older kids. A few teenagers carried babies in their arms. All wore filthy clothes covered in ash. Fearful eyes flitted back and forth as they began to pass. But none of these kids were crying. They all seemed to be relieved to be here, to have escaped the machines. Ronan could only imagine what they had been through. Some of the kids had bandages wrapped around their limbs or heads. Others had bruises or scabs and scratches. Strangely, Ronan had yet to see any adults, until he looked back to the entrance to see the tube they had used. A group of older refugees huddled behind a wall of troopers as the kids were escorted away. Troopers began binding their wrists together. Ortiz came walking back into the tunnel and over to Zlaner. She said something that Ronan couldn't hear. A few minutes later, a detachment of combat troops started down the passageway with the adults in tow.
Keep alert!
The adults slogged forward. They appeared in far worse shape than the kids. Many of them coughed and limped in the nearly 200-strong group. The first of the refugees trudged past Ronan. Their tattered clothes hung to their emaciated frames. Dust and grit clung to their filthy flesh, nearly concealing the tattoos tracing up their limbs. Now Ronan realized why they had their hands bound. The LDC just didn't fear these refugees had been sent here by the machines. These people were Coalition survivors. Every single one had the Nordic tattoos and markings of the enemy.
Shit. We got to feed and house these assholes?
One of the prisoners looked in his direction. He was an elderly man, maybe 70 years old, with wrinkled, weathered flesh from too many years in the sun. Perhaps in his past he had been a fighter, maybe even a good one. He glared at Mickey. There was still fight in his eyes.
More people to stand with us when the time comes.
Or to shoot us in the back.
After the refugees had been sent to processing and the squad released from the detail, they went to the mess for a dinner of gelatinous protein slabs. Ortiz and Zlaner stood at the front of the room as the machine slayers ate.
I hope you all got some good shooting in today, despite the distraction. The timeline for graduation has been moved up due to recent events.
Murmurs spread through the cadets.
And earlier today, a group of terrorists led by former Sergeant Tig Walsh kidnapped pilot Captain Jake Harbach. They stole a moth after slaying six of our comrades. They also damaged two King Cobras during their escape to Earth.
Ronan felt his heart skip a beat at hearing Tig was still alive. Ortiz paced in front of the group and then stopped, her features stern.
Tomorrow you will graduate as troopers. After you swear your oath, you will face more enemies than just machines and Coalition terrorists. There are people among us that do not believe in the LDC. We must remain vigilant in flushing them out. Our survival depends on it.
Ronan swallowed as he tried to keep calm. In his peripheral vision, he could see Mickey glancing over at him. The other boy knew he admired and respected Tig.
Always ready, always vigilant.
Always ready, always vigilant!
Ronan, gripped by shock, could barely mutter the response with the other cadets. Ortiz and Zlaner exited, leaving the cadets to their meals.
I thought Tig was dead.
Mickey looked at Ronan again, as if waiting for a reaction, but Ronan held strong. They ate their food in silence. Ronan forced his down, but hardly had an appetite. He thought about pulling out the Warrior Codex as soon as they would return to the barracks, but there was still too much on his mind to concentrate on reading. He wondered if Tig had gone to find Uncle Akira like he had promised, and if the LDC was lying again. Bradley stared across the table at Ronan.
You okay?
Ronan looked up at Bradley, but said nothing.
It's going to be okay. We're going to stop the machines when they come. We just have to stick together. Just like Ortiz and Zlaner said.
Yeah.
Members of the platoon started getting up and leaving with their trays and heading back to the barracks. Bradley offered a comforting nod.
For what it's worth, a lot of the other cadets look up to you. They know what you did on E-Day, how you helped save Orson, and they trust you.
Mickey looked over from down the table, then stood with his tray and walked off. Ronan looked back to Bradley.
Thanks.
Ronan wanted to unload all his worries, to admit he was scared, but he recalled the lessons from the Warrior Codex that Akira had left for him. The role of the leader was to set an example for his troopers. Ronan needed to do the same now, despite the turmoil raging inside.
Come on, let's get back to barracks. Get some sleep. Tomorrow, we become troopers.